everybody. Welcome to Fam for All Moms. My name is Shahrzad, and joining me is Susan. Hi, hello, Susan.
Hello. Hello.
We're doing some fun, different stuff. We're going to answer some very commonly asked questions ourselves, and we also get to ask our guest.
Yep.
And our guest is amazing. I think you guys definitely fell in love with her when she was on a few weeks ago, Elizabeth Hunterton. But first,
let's answer some questions. These are questions that we found in our private Facebook group, and they're common questions. So we picked a few of them. We're going to ask our guest also, but we're going to answer them first.
And I think the point is overall is that there's so many different answers.
Yep.
And when these questions come up in the Facebook group, it's like there's just
there's not one right answer.
Common question in the Facebook group is how long should you wait before having another kid? I can only speak from my personal experience. Is that Idris was 1 year and about 8-ish months or so when I got pregnant with Cyrus. And if I'm doing math correctly, that makes them exactly 2.5 years apart. For me, you know, now that I'm out of what I often refer to as the trenches, I think it's great because they're little buddies. They're besties. I mean, they play hard, they fight hard, and they get to, you know, have fun together. And especially during quarantine, it's been so nice that they have each other to play with constantly. And they're, you know, so I recommend, not recommend. That's what worked for me. I don't know. Your kids are exactly the
My
same
kids are
age
the
difference.
Same difference. But I'll tell you, I have a couple of friends who got pregnant the first time around the same time as me with Nikosh, my first one. And then I noticed, so they had, you know, like they jokingly call it like Irish
Meg.
Twins
yeah,
and stuff.
Meg.
Yeah, like yeah. Meg, for instance. And they had babies pretty much back to back. Meg had her second child. Meg is one of my besties. She had her second child a year to the date almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like both her babies were born in July.
We had her on family YouTube channel.
Yeah, exactly a year apart. And she was in a panic when she first found out she was pregnant because she'd only been, you know, she'd been postpartum for what, 2.5-3 months or something like that.
Yeah.
And she got pregnant. I remember Arun's first response to me when I said that. He was like, wait, does that mean that they're fucking already? Like,
I think
what?
That's what it means, Arun.
Yeah. Yes,
pretty
exactly.
Pretty sure that the birds and the bees go.
Yep. Poor Arun. I made him wait so much longer. But anyway, they, you know, she got pregnant back to back like that and she was panicking. But then she had her second baby and they're now, you know, a little bit older and it seems like it worked out totally fine. Like they're closer in stages. They're closer in like, you know, getting past everything. Whereas like I'm in the back to the like super baby stages when Nikosh is also like in all these different, like he's in his emotions and like hardcore tantrum toddler phase. And then we've got sweet little Isla who's like an infant, you know? And so it's like, they're completely different. Their worlds are vastly different right now. And I see the positives of having babies back to back when I look at what Meg goes through because both her babies are like they're chilling together and playing now.
That's really close back to back. I would say for the most part, yours are very close in age though.
Yeah, 2.5 years.
There's not
years
like
is
a
not, yeah.
6 to 10 year spread between, which you hear about sometimes too.
I mean, that's what I was. I was 5 years. Oh, yeah. I'm 5 years older than my first sister, and then I'm 5 years older. I mean, I'm 5 years older than my first sister. And then I'm like almost 8 years older than my youngest sister.
Yeah.
So, and we definitely weren't tight. Like we're obviously like
friends now.
We're friends now. We always were, but I was always in such a different life stage than they were.
Yeah.
So, you have to imitate your child or one of your children's worst tantrums. And what age was it?
I mean, I feel like
we should be prepared for the audio to.
I know. I won't go. I'll break the audio if I actually imitate my kids because they can get very loud. A funny thing that happened that always comes to mind because I took a picture of it is I was driving. This is pre-COVID. This maybe about 2 years ago. I was driving to take my kids to school, daycare and preschool at the time. And a police drove by with its lights flashing, you know, siren, everything, in a high-speed chase going the opposite direction of me chasing a car. And my kids started screaming with excitement that there was a police first, and then so mad at me that I didn't get involved in the high-speed chase and chase after the police. So they were yelling at me like, "Mom! Follow the police! Police! Police!" I mean, they hyperventilate when they see a police, a fire truck, an ambulance, a train. It's just all, it's like, it goes from excitement to panic to like why the fuck aren't we following that police? Like in
a 'cause you're a terrible person.
Second, yeah, as I'm obviously an asshole parent. In a 60-second span, it goes from like excitement to just sheer anger that
and
I'm
disappointment.
Not and disappointment. I let them down. So that I mean that's like a daily thing though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm deep in the tantrums right now, and you know when people used to say that. Like it's these tantrums can really go crazy over nothing. Mm-hmm. Now I really understand. I mean, like case in point, just yesterday, and I'm always worried that our neighbors are going to call the police on us because mm-hmm. it gets so intense. Nikash and I are like hanging out, playing a game on the floor, and then he says he wants to go play outside. So I said, okay, let's go play outside. Let me go get our shoes.
Nope.
He didn't even say anything. He didn't even say anything. I just like got up to go get our shoes so we could go play outside. And while I literally from one bedroom to the living room to go get his shoes, I hear him having such a heart attack. I thought maybe like something actually happened to him.
Of course. Like he was getting stabbed.
Like, yes. Yeah. Like maybe somebody is stabbing him or something. And I was like, Arun comes in and I was like, what's going on? He's like, I don't know. He's freaking out for no reason. And I'm like, it's so bad, the sound that's coming out of his mouth from a different room, that I thought there's no way something didn't happen. Right. So I walk back into the bedroom with our shoes and he's having such a heart attack. I can't even begin to tell you like the heart attack he's having. I'm like, what happened? And he's like, just I can't even imitate it. It's like, like freaking out. And I was like, what's going on? What's going on? And he's like, I said, we've got our shoes. Let's go play outside. And he says, no play outside. That's all that's what? No play outside. That's what he was mad about, even though it was his idea. And I just said I wanted to go get shoes. He flipped.
Flipped. Yeah, the tantrums. It happens. People post video of their kids having tantrums. I like to laugh at my kids having some tantrums when I know they're not actually upset. And when it's just something little like that, like not chasing, not getting involved in high speed chase or not wanting to play outside. You know, it's hilarious to me. Well, if you can like step out of it for a second yeah. and calm down and be like, yeah, you know, they do not like getting laughed at for sure. So you got to cover your mouth.
Yeah.
But I think it's funny. I personally sometimes. Post photos. I just posted a photo of Cyrus so angry in a Batman costume. And I said, he's bat mad. And
wait, I didn't see this.
I posted it on stories. I
mean, bat mad.
He's like the angriest little Batman. And I looked at it and I just started laughing because it's so, it just sums up being a 3-year-old kid. You're wearing a Batman costume and you're still pissed.
I love
it. Okay, last question for each of us. This is a good one, though. And again, so popular. What did you do for your postpartum hair loss? I feel like you and I have personally talked about this a lot. But go ahead.
I mean, I'm in it right now.
Yeah.
For baby number two.
It doesn't look like it. Because
I'm 10 months out from having a baby. And I feel like I'm in the hair growth. Like I can see.
You're closer to 11 months.
Yeah, I am.
It's August.
I'm really close. I know. Yeah. Jeez Louise. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I know. I haven't seen her in so long. It makes me sick.
Ugh. Ugh. My parents haven't seen my baby for 10 months. Anyway, but my hair, I have baby hairs right now. So mm-hmm. that means that it's working. It's happening. I stay on my prenatals all the way through until I like for a year. I feel like your body just in general doesn't go back for at least a year. Like even if you feel like you're feeling better and more like yourself, just everything doesn't go back until at least a year.
Yeah.
So I'd say for a year. And what I did was prenatals. I'm starting to use some like hair growth serums. One is by a brand called Vegamore. Mm-hmm. And that seems like it's helping too.
Cool. Yeah. With Idris, my hair was never better when I was pregnant. It was shocking. And then it all came out. And I didn't get that sexy pregnancy hair second time around. So then when I was losing that second time around after nursing, I felt like I was just, I had nothing. I'm just like almost 4 years out from having Cyrus because he'll be 4 in November. I feel like just now my hair is starting to grow again.
Wow.
And like thicken out.
Did you do anything?
For everybody. So I started taking, I've added, I feel like more superfoods. I'm getting better sleep. I'm sleeping more. You know, the first 2 years after baby, it was just, I was a zombie. And I think sleep helps. I obsessively drink water. I pee constantly. Just in the last, like I would say during COVID, I've had more time to take vitamins or just like remember to take them as I'm mm-hmm. sitting around watching TV all day. And I'm taking Hairdomen. This really pretty Persian girl named Layla, who has this fabulous hair. It's her brand, and I want her hair.
Hairdman. Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, we'll see. Stay tuned. Look at my hair. See if it works.
Not sponsored.
Not sponsored. No. We'll let you know if anything's sponsored.
All right.
Anyway, so after a quick break, we will be back with our awesome guest. We're so excited. This episode of FAM is brought to you by BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P.
Yeah, you know, I think that this is a time where people really need someone to talk to, and there's no shame in that whatsoever. I know it's hard to find a therapist that you can actually see right now, especially in some places where we're social distancing and stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is a really great way to find a therapist for you.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can actually start communicating with them in under 48 hours. So keep in mind, it's not actually a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
And the service is available to everybody worldwide. So you can access a therapist wherever you are.
You guys can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, really whatever makes you feel comfortable.
Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily.
You guys can visit betterhelp.com/fam. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And actually, if you use our link, you get 10% off of your first month. So go to betterhelp.com/fam, F-A-M.
Elizabeth, you are looking so sexy.
She is. Look at that hair.
I know, in your face.
You guys,
I want to hug you. I was, it was such a tease. I have to say, you teased me because I thought she was going to be here in real life.
I know.
And I got so excited. I don't know if you could tell the enthusiasm from my text. Well, you know, you were such a crowd favorite. I personally got so many DMs and actual text messages from a lot of my friends who heard your episode on the podcast. So I just want to say thank you again for that episode. It was very moving to me and everybody who heard it. I think your words were so powerful, and we really wanted to hang out with you again. I know you're Susan's bestie. And so any excuse to chat with you again, and you have so much to offer. But we want to have some fun with you first. We want to ask some questions.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, first off, for people that don't know you, how many kids do you have and how old are they?
So I've got two boys and a bonus son. So my bonus son is 18, and then my boys are 5 and 6, and it's as hard as it sounds.
So bonus boy came from her husband.
Okay.
And then she's got the youngins. The bonus boy, by the way, is huge. He's an adult now at this point, right?
So weird. I'm like, good morning, Cam. And he's like, good morning. I'm like, okay, first of all, put on a shirt muscle. And second of all, what happened to your voice? Like, it's crazy. He's Adonis and he's a good kid. But yeah, so my husband had he was a single father.
Yeah.
So he's been with us full time since he was 7.
Oh, okay. Because, you know, I actually saw you post about him on Facebook. I want to say, did he just graduate from something, high school or college?
He did. We did a drive-through graduation for high school.
How are the seniors of 2020 doing?
You know, he's interesting because he's fairly antisocial. Like, he has a lot of friends. He's into sports. So it wouldn't be as catastrophic as it would be if, like, he was like student body president.
Right.
But he had athletic scholarships that are now off the table because his athletic season was canceled.
Wow.
That is challenging.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Such a bummer. Well, I have another question for you.
Yeah, well, let's get into the fun stuff. The fun stuff.
Okay. Can you imitate your child's or one of your children's worst tantrums? And what age was this?
And, you know, the reason why this is a funny question, I turned this one into a question because I would see moms posting in our
videos.
Well, they post videos, but they're also like, is this normal? Right. And I was like, oh, my God, if I imitated Nikosh and like showed somebody like what his tantrums sound like, I think they'd be like, oh, my God, my life is normal.
Seriously. So it all started. My boys were going through this phase where they would drop their pants and they would look at each other and they would go now. And they were 3 and 4 at the time. And they would drop their pants and they would yell, we like to squeeze our penises. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. And so we would be in Target and they would squeeze their penis. And I was like, okay, stop. You guys stop laughing. And I was like trying to corral this. And one day we were in Target and I was like wrestling my son to pull his pants up. And when they outnumber you, like, they're scrappy. And I was like, so I'm getting jumped by one son. I'm trying to wrestle the other one's pants up. And Nathaniel, my youngest one, drops to the ground, full on pass out, and just goes, you know, that when the cry is so real, but it goes silent for a second.
Yep.
So like, I was like, okay. And he was like, my mom won't let me squeeze my penis. And I was like, okay, you've got to stop. And they like, stop saying penis and stop shouting it. And so that was probably one of the worst tantrums. Like, one's rolling around on the ground because I won't let him squeeze his penis, and the other one has no pants. So
I just have to say, I'm so happy that you said that, because my kids are so obsessed with their penis, and it's just nice to know that another boy mom is experiencing what I'm experiencing.
Oh, yeah.
Non-stop with the penis.
Well, I was asleep this morning, speaking of penises.
Yes.
And Nikosh comes barging in. He's like, wakey, wakey. He's got a shirt on, no pants.
Yeah.
And he goes, he like, you know, like lifts his, like his hips up, you know? And he's like, mommy, because he needed help putting a diaper back on.
Uh-huh.
Because he tried to do it himself. And he couldn't do it. And so he's like whacking his penis in front of me. Like, he's like, look, mom, look.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, thanks. This is what I wake up to.
It's so unsettling. You're like, ugh.
Oh, yeah. How much time do you think is best to wait between having each kid? And I think everyone has a really different answer to this. So it's always interesting to hear.
Listen, I think having kids is like surgery. There's no good time. There's just time. You know, like, it's going to happen when it happens, and you make it work. It, you know, as a mom, it's not like you get the luxury of saying, maybe I'll wait a little bit. Like, you know, you get audibles all day and you just do the best you can. 18 months, our boys to the day are 18 months apart. They are like legitimate best friends, and I'm so grateful. But it would have been equally hard if they were 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years apart. Like, there's just no easy time to have more than to be outnumbered.
Yeah. It's true.
Totally.
Third question. You want to hit that
one? Okay. Third question. And this is such a common question in the Facebook group and just among every mom I know, is what did you do for your postpartum hair loss? Well, first of all, did you lose hair postpartum? And then what did you do?
I didn't. My hair was like lush and fabulous.
Jelly.
But I also had like a fractured pelvis and like the world's hardest pregnancy. So I think God was like, you know what, sister, I'm going to go ahead and let you keep your hair.
Sorry, I'm really happy that you made, you're funny, even though you, we're going to talk about that another time too, the fractured pelvis and that.
Wait, sounds, oh my word. Well, you did experience though, so you didn't get the postpartum hair loss, but didn't your hair, I remember the second time, your hair straightened in certain areas, didn't it?
I did. Yeah. The texture totally changed. And it turns out that was normal. Like, there was like parts of my hair that were just stick straight. And I was like,
she's got really curly hair. If you guys can't see her, she's got really curly hair and parts of her hair went straight.
So interesting.
And I was just, and I was like asking my doctor, I was like, yeah, so about the curls, like, am I gonna need to get a perm, like a spot perm, to figure this out? And he was like, no, once your hormones level out. But then I had really bad postpartum depression, so the levels just never quite stabilized. But one day I just woke up and I was like, oh, my curls are back. Well, that's one less thing to worry about.
Oh,
how crazy.
Yeah,
I know. It's, you know, there's there's no one answer for anything ever. That's why it's nice to chat with other moms, because the answers are just all over the place.
Well, it just makes you realize, like, it's just, it's a challenge for everybody and it's normal. It's totally fine. Anyway, so I'm excited to have you back on the podcast, because one of the things that, I mean, we're constantly talking about this because it's such a, I mean, this is one of the biggest things of your life. It's the story of your life. And I think it's what, you know, people find it so fascinating when they meet you, because you are obviously, you live like this normal life. You're, you know, beautiful, you are confident, you are successful, like everything just seems like it lines up. And it seems like you might have just grown up with just a totally happy, normal life. But when people find out your backstory, starting from when you were a baby, I think they're like, wow.
I was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love for you to start sharing that story a little bit more. I know you used to, like, you kind of went on like a campaign of like sharing it to find, well, I don't even want to say why you were doing it, because that's going to give away part of the story. But you went on this like whole campaign in your 20s. And I feel like in your 30s, you got serious with family and babies and stuff, and it started to slow down. So I want to bring it back.
Oh, well, thank you. And I mean, I think like any of us, right, we all think our stories are normal because it's all we know. And it's not until you talk to other people that you realize how unique it is. So my story began when I was discovered at the Reno airport at 10 days old, give or take a few. We don't know exactly how old I was. But two pilots found me and took me to Lost and Found. And because that's where you take suitcases and babies. I ended up going through the foster care system. My parents were the next parents, the next foster parents on the list to receive an infant. So my mom and dad are white. My brother's Native American and Hispanic. And I was raised in rural Nevada. And growing up, knowing you can literally be mixed with anything, you know, there's that weird kind of pursuit of trying to find out who you were. And so the first time I saw another Black person was when I saw The Cosby Show, and I wrote, I think it was like Marcy Carsey Warner or something. I wrote them a letter because I needed them to teach me, like I knew I was at least mixed with Black, but they never wrote me back. So kind of went through my childhood with that. And then I'm not sure if we covered on the last show, I was molested by my babysitter's daughter from about the ages of 5 to 9, which added kind of this other layer of my childhood, because she told me, if I told anybody what happened, I would be taken to another airport and I would never see my parents again. And when you're 5, that's a really scary thing. And so I kept this secret and started my own business, Lizzie's Zippy Fast Money Service, where I sold like my arts and crafts so I could make money, because I knew I had to keep the secret. And the way that I did that was by starting a business so I could buy underwear, because that was how I concealed what was happening. So I had that. And then, you know, my brother and I had a really complicated relationship as far as that went. And then, of course, in middle school, I was the first Black, that was the first time I interacted with Black people. And they really took me under their wing, taught me everything I knew, and then went to high school where I was, you know, the white supremacy, where we talked about that already. And then went to college where I was sexually assaulted my sophomore year in my home. I was woken from my sleep and assaulted. So that's my sophomore year in college. And then I went on, fast forward to when I won Miss Nevada. When I used to live with 3 football players, and I lost a bet on the Miami Dolphins game. And as a result, had to do the most ridiculous, humiliating, degrading experience, which was a pageant.
Oh my God. Wait, that's how you got into pageants?
Yes, you lost because we were flipping back and forth between like Miss USA and the Dolphins game. And I was such a tomboy. And so when the Dolphins lost, I was like, all right, guys, you know, what do I have to do? And like, you have to do the most ridiculous, the most humiliating. And I was like, I live with 3 dudes. What could be worse than that? Like, do I have to do laundry for a month or dishes for a year? What is it? And they're like, you have to do a pageant. And I was like, no. Okay. Anything but that. Anything but like, be reasonable, guys.
School's different, right?
School is.
That's an understatement.
So yeah, does school exist anymore?
I don't know. But, you know, I have personally talked to so many moms that are freaking out about what to do with their kids. So I want to tell you guys about Homer. Homer is a membership app that will help teach your kids how to read based on things that they actually love to learn about. So it's a little bit more customized for each kid. For example, I signed up Idris for the Homer app recently, and he chose a lot. There's a bunch of different subjects you can choose from. He chose space, trucks. Mm-hmm. What else did he choose? He's really into, he's very into space and trucks right now. Nothing really else exists. But what my point is that you can have a customized reading experience. Mm-hmm. This helps your kids learn how to read.
Yeah. And you know, it's not just for the older kids. Nikosh is only 3 years old, and there are definitely games for him to play. The other day he was trying to figure out what were letters. And I love that because they make it a game for him, but he's actually learning at the same time. And he is self-sufficient. He can actually start the app himself and go through all of the games without me having to do it for him.
That's awesome. You guys may have heard me talk about how I'm not really into a ton of screen time for my kids, but this is where I will make an exception. This is ad-free. It's safe. It's really easy for kids to use. And instead of letting your kid just be out in the wilds of YouTube where you have no idea what's going to pop up, Homer will actually keep your child engaged with educational content and activities so that you might get, as a mom or a dad or a parent, a little teeny break, maybe.
Oh, a little break.
Maybe a little break, which is great. Break.
And you guys can actually get a 60-day free trial, so you can just try it out. It's really easy. Go to learnwithhomer.com/fam, and you'll get your 60-day free trial.
So I stumbled into pageantry. I got first runner-up, and then the athlete in me was like, game on. Are you saying I can't win? All right, let's do this. And so I did that. So I lost my first pageant. Then I went on to Miss Black Nevada. I won that. 10 days later, I was at Miss Black USA. I won that. Gave that title up just to compete in Miss Las Vegas. And then I went to Miss Nevada and Miss America. And when I was competing for Miss America, the night I was crowned, it was like on CNN, like one time airport foundling wins Miss Nevada. Like it's scrolling along the bottom. And then I was, you know, it's inside of an edition, Good Morning America. And it was like this kind of talk show circuit of people asking about my story. And there was a fairly famous case of somebody who'd gone through foster care and was recently reunited with his biological family. And he had given me really good advice that I really took to heart. He said, he was like, listen, I know you're like any other orphan and you sing the song from Annie, betcha he's rich, betcha she sews, betcha she's made you a closet of clothes. And I was like, oh yeah, I used to sing that looking out my window and somewhere out there from American Tale, just thinking that maybe somewhere out there we were looking at the same moon and all of those things, right? And he said, you know, the songs are great, but the reality is you should not look for your biological family until you're ready to discover that your biological father is a pedophile and your biological mother is even worse, and that won't affect you. And at first that seemed harsh, right? Like,
yes.
I was like, ease up. But he's right. You know, when you can come from anywhere, that kind of forms your identity, right? And if you find out that you're the offspring of that, what does that make you?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really spent a lot of time in that and worked really hard to come to a level of acceptance that I could cross paths with anyone and find something to love in everyone. And then I had my son who, let's say, had him at...
Actually, before you get into your son, let's save that for another episode. Let's take it all the way back to the start, because I think you kind of like glazed over it a little bit. But you were literally a baby, 10 days, give or take, like you said.
Yeah, 3 to 21 days old.
Yeah, left at an airport, like literally left on a bench for someone to find her. And I think that it's just, it really sets the tone of, you know, who you could become as a person. And where like life could take you from there. And you've really exemplified how you can make it a better life no matter what. But I think that it, you know, I think it's something that people don't really imagine. Like what happens to a baby that is found at an airport?
So I guess the easiest way to explain it is in 15 or 16, long lost family had reached out and said, oh, we want to help you reunify with your birth parents. And I said, great. They said, send us everything you have. So I went back to Washoe County Social Services, who handled my abandonment and adoption, and the Reno Police Department, and got all of the witness reports, all of the investigative reports, every sheet of paper about my entire existence. And it was more information than I ever had. And it was 19 pages of information that really drew the story of, okay, I was abandoned. I went to lost and found. Witness number 4 physically runs into presumably my biological mother. And my biological mother left me in different locations and had run-ins with people that were like, you cannot leave your baby. You cannot do that. And ultimately, like, tried to leave me in a women's restroom, tried to leave me in a hallway, and ultimately left me at the Delta ticketing counter. And 2 pilots were coming up the runway and found me and took me to lost and found, at which point my biological mother walked out of the airport. And so then what happened on the back end of that is that the Reno Police Department did an investigation. We got witness accounts from the 9 witnesses. I was taken to the hospital, put into foster care. But when I was found, I was, with other than a slight fever, I was healthy. I was chubby. I was obviously loved. And I didn't, you know, but when you're 3 to 18 days, what long lost family, the private investigator said, he said, whoever left you may have actually created the perfect abandonment, because you were found January 17th, 1980. You're 3 to 21 days old at the time. So your birth date falls somewhere between the tail end of 1979 and the beginning of 1980. And in the 80s, when America sent everything to Asia to be put on computers, they separated it by decades. So let's just assume that you were born in a hospital. We would have to pull every single record from the 70s and every single record from the 80s to find this 3-week window in which you may have been born, or which you were born. Again, assuming that you were born in a hospital. And so what does that mean when you're left at the airport? I think probably, and it sounds so trivial to most people, but to me, the thing that I think is the most powerful, and it's something people take for granted every single day, is their birthday. You know, most people think, oh, it's another day, or they mourn it because they're older. And I look at it, I'm like, do you know what a freaking blessing it is to know that on X amount of years ago today you were born? And those stupid BuzzFeed personality tests and all the numerology stuff that you, that most people can do because they know they were born on a certain date in a certain year. I just don't get to do that. And I've never been able to do that. And I used to do, you know, every single date in that 18 day span and figure out, oh, well, maybe this sounds the most accurate. But at the end, I had possibilities for each date. And that wasn't a scientific way of finding what day I was born based on my personality, you know, online test results. So I think, never mind the race stuff and all of that. It's just that barest essential, right? When your birth certificate says Jane Doe, baby Jane Doe, and your airport and your birthplace says airport with an asterisk. And I joke about it, like I've learned to laugh about it, but I'm like, I hope I'm never the target of a birther movement because I'm screwed. You know, if birthers come after me and they want to see my birth certificate, it's like baby Jane Doe left at an airport, you know, asterisk, birth date, January 17th, asterisk, date found. You know, it's like my birth certificate is such a joke if you really look at it, for it being anything factual or accurate. But I think when you are left at an airport, you learn to laugh at it. You learn to find the peace with it, because if you don't, you will have to accept the likelihood and the reality that the person who is biologically programmed to love you, either loved you enough to leave you or didn't love you enough to keep you. And maybe it's both. So I think when I really sit down and I sit with it, you know, I have tried to live a really exemplary life and be an extraordinary human being and accomplish a lot and live my life with the moral code in hopes that if and when I do meet my biological parents, I'm enough. And that, you know, whether it's because I'm mixed race or whatever the reason may be, my hope is that I don't bring shame to my biological mother or her family. But the reality is that my existence alone can do that. And that's really kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah. It's, you know, we have so many conversations about what could have happened. I mean, you and I have even gotten into like almost like intense debates about like who your mom could be and what all these, you know, like what is it that caused this to happen and stuff, because at the end of the day you really don't know, right? Like you can only speculate. And we've gone off of, you know, your witness reports and stuff that you have, like what she looks like, I mean, what her ethnicity could be. There's been so much information, right? I mean, when I say so much, I mean like not a lot of information.
It's not. It's like, you know, an Oriental, which I know you love that word.
I love when people refer to Asians as Oriental.
A potentially Oriental woman who is 5'4 to 5'7, wearing either denim pants or trousers and a long coat with fur trim, aged approximately 18 to 35.
Approximately. Like, what's that mean? Like,
that's all I've got. Like, that's the physical. And when I got that, I was so grateful. Like, when I got that information, because it's more than I'd ever had. And I was like, awesome. Like, now I can finally picture it, right? Because when I always pictured it, she always had a hat on because she had no distinguishing features because I didn't know what she was. And so once I got that, those 19 pages of information, I was like, okay, so now I can start visualizing it. And now she's a Japanese woman. And that was huge. And I was so grateful for that.
And the Japanese part is a whole other part of the story. It's kind of amazing. It's like, you know, I keep referring to this since it's a podcast right now, and most people are probably listening. If you can't see Liz, for the majority of your life, I'd say, right, you thought you were just black, right? Like maybe mixed a little bit, but black.
I thought I was Pacific Islander. Like I thought I was black and Pacific Islander, because my mom, growing up, we had what was called a me board. And it was when we would go through different magazines and we would cut people out and we would put that person on the me board. My mom was like, "Ooh, look, you have his ears." And that would go on the me board. And, "Oh, you have her hair." And by the time we were done, we had this beautiful collection of black and Pacific Islander people. And my mom was like, "These are your people." And I was like, hey, crazy. I was there when we cut these out of a magazine. They're not my people. But that was part of my narrative. And so I had always thought I was Black and Pacific Islander. And when I got my DNA results, I was looking and I was like, oh, that makes sense. 50% Black. That's not the Black column. And it like threw me for a loop. It was the Asian column. And it did. It turned out my biological mother was 100% Japanese.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So I'm more Japanese than anything else. I'm only 35% Black and 15% white. But yeah, it's.
But identity. I know, right?
That. I don't even know what to say because I feel like I just need to process everything you said. And just like last time, I'm speechless.
Yeah.
But wow, Liz. I mean, what a fucking story. Gives me chills. And yeah. I don't know. I don't want to say I can't imagine because I don't want to, I don't know, sometimes that's like the wrong thing to say, but you are just an amazing person.
Well, identity, I think, is a big, right? Like I ask Liz this all the time, Elizabeth, the grown-up name. I ask her all the time, why do you want to know who your parents are? Can I, like, what makes it, like, I have friends who have been adopted who have no desire
right.
to know who their biological parents are. And then I have Liz, who absolutely wants to know who her biological parents are. And there's this part of her that comes out. She's not necessarily ever saying this to me, but this is what I take from it. It's identity, right? It's like knowing who you are and the things that we take for granted, just like her saying, just like a birthday,
yeah.
But also your ethnic makeup. When people look at you, they make assumptions about what you are, but do you know what you are?
Yeah. Well, and I think that was, when I got my DNA results and some people are completely against doing things like that. And I was like, I have waited my entire life to know what boxes to check. I have checked other my entire life. And, the main reason I even started looking for my biological parents was because I was pregnant. And, anytime you're pregnant, you have to do that screening for, genetic, diseases and things like that. But usually they start with a baseline of at least knowing what ethnicity you are. And when you're me and you can be anything, you have to do all the panels, all the blood tests, every single test under the sun, for any single race, because you can literally be anything. And when I remember when I got my DNA results, I was talking to Nate, my husband, and I said, babe, we're going to be able to tell our kids what race they are and what day they were born. What can't they do? The world is their oyster. I know my races now, but I may go my entire life not knowing my birthday. Like my sons get that. It blows my mind that in my lifetime, like here are my sons that get to know what day they were born. I can't imagine.
Wearing a mask is something we should all be on board with right now, but it seems like every mask you find has its own setbacks. It doesn't fit right, the material is cheap, it gets dirty, the list goes on and on. And if you think you have complaints, try finding a mask your kid will like. That's why I'm so excited I found the Crayola School Mask Pack. You guys, these masks are so fun and amazing. There's one for every single day of the week. And what I really, really love about them is the comfortable cloth and adjustable strap that goes around your ear.
I've been so surprised with how quickly Nikosh took to wearing face masks. The thing that I haven't liked is that all the masks that I get him, they always need to be adjusted in the back. I have to like make a knot or something. So I was really pumped to find Crayola School Mask Pack. There are 5 masks for each day of the school week, and they all come in these really bright Crayola, fun colors. But I love that you can adjust the size of it just behind the ear, and they make it so much easier, and it doesn't look so funny with me like trying to tie it.
That's my favorite part about them. Yeah, they're bright, they're fun, and they can coordinate with their outfits a little bit more, which my boys really have enjoyed doing, and I love that you can adjust them. This is the only mask that I've personally seen that works that way, where you can adjust it easily. And they're really fun. And when you have a pack for 5 days, you don't have to clean them as much.
I know.
Because I've had masks that have like chocolate stains on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
And like boogers and stuff like that. But this is really great. I'm a huge fan. And actually, you know, we're all wearing masks right now. I'm sure we're going to be wearing masks for a while. And any way that we can make masks for kids a little bit more fun, I'm all about. So I'm a fan of these, you guys. I know you will love them. You guys can do what I did and get your family the Crayola School Mask Pack today. Go to schoolmaskpack.com/fam. That's schoolmaskpack.com/fam. You know, there is so much discussion, your horoscope, your sign, who you are, da da da. So I can imagine as a little kid, like feeling left out with that whole conversation. Did you know when you were younger that you were left at an airport? Did your parents tell you that when you were a kid?
Yeah. So my mom and dad always raised me knowing that I had two sets of parents, one set who loved me enough to give me up and the other set who loved me enough to give me my life and choose me. And so like my biological parents were never vilified by my parents. And my mom, I asked my mom, I was like, so mom, when did I find out? And she said, I remember it like it was yesterday. You were about 5 years old and I was coming to tuck you in and read you a story. And you were just laughing hysterically, like cry laughing. And I asked you, Elizabeth, what is so funny? And you looked up at me with your giant eyes and said, mommy, did you really find me at an airport? So what I'm guessing is some kid probably made a wisecrack about it.
Oh,
and it just sounds funny. But, and then on, I mean, I grew up, my mom would make these, we would make these elaborate stories. Like maybe you were a princess sleeping on the balcony and a giant dragon flew by and you got stuck in his talon and he needed somewhere to land and he landed at the airport. And so we always had all these stories about how I ended up at the airport. And it wasn't in seventh grade. I got like in an all out debate with my science teacher when he was trying to sell me some nonsense about a reproductive system. I mean, I remember I was like, you know, this is outrageous. And I left the classroom and like went down to the library and I was so upset. And I called my mom crying. I'm like, mom, they are trying to feed me these lies that babies don't come from the airport.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I've seen all the newspaper articles. Like I know my truth. And then my mom always had such a great way of explaining things to me in a way that I understood. And so I had to go back and apologize to the science teacher because I called him like a quack and a liar and who whatever else my preteen mind could think of that would hurt his feelings. But
understandable, though.
It's funny. This story starts to just like these kinds of conversations with Liz go so quickly.
Oh, my God.
Already,
I know.
Like deep into it. But, you know, something I wanted to point out is that, you know, and again, it's another story, another episode. Liz actually ended up finding through genetic testing her biological father, again, another story, but has yet to find her biological mother. And I'm curious, I mean, I kind of know the answer because I talk to you like every single day, but I think everybody is curious to know if you're still looking.
I'm still looking and I'm so close. Like I'm
so close
to finding her.
Well, we found out she's Japanese. That's one big thing.
What a curveball, though, right? I mean, you didn't expect that one at all.
No. Like, and what's interesting, I minored in Japanese in college.
Yeah, she's
no
always been drawn.
Way.
Yep, always drawn to Japanese.
Oh, yeah. Chills.
Like, and took to it like a duck to water. Like, I speak Spanish, I speak French, but Japanese was my deal. Like, Japanese, I just got. So, yeah, it was crazy. So I never, like, I loved the culture, studied the culture enough to minor in it, and then ended up finding out I was from the culture. But yeah, I'm close. But what I've learned through that search is that even when you say you're close, you can still be so far away, mm-hmm. just so impossibly far away, no matter how close you are to the answers.
You know, for somebody who, okay, I feel like we keep getting, like you said, you're close, right? And we keep talking about like, who could be your biological mother? And I want to bring this up because this is a public platform. There's always the chance that someone is listening. Why would you want to find your biological mother? Why would you? I mean, both biological parents. Why would you want to find them if you've lived a happy life?
You know, and I have. I've lived an amazing life. I always grew up wanting to find them because my mom said she wanted to find my biological mother so she could thank her. And so that was a gift I always wanted to give to my mom, the opportunity to thank my biological mother. And I just think from my standpoint, I want her to know that that it was all worth it and that she made the right choice and that she shouldn't have one second of guilt, because that heartfelt desire that she had to do the hardest thing that she probably ever had to do, it was right. Like, I found the sense of belonging and acceptance that she wanted me to have enough to leave me at an airport. And I want her to know that, like, nothing, not even that I forgive you, there's nothing to forgive, but to thank her, because I've had this incredible life. And if she knew the friendships I had and the love I've experienced and the joy that I've had, she would release herself from any guilt that she may have. And I do have a million questions for her, but it doesn't even round in the top 10 or 20 why she left me. I have so many other questions. What were your hopes, your dreams, your favorite color, like all these little things that most people know about their mom. I want to start with that baseline, because I've never been able to participate in that conversation when it comes to my biological mother. And so it's, I don't think most of us, when we talk about our moms, we don't usually want to start with the mistakes. You know, we want to know who she was and what she stood for and what kind of woman, mother, and person she was, because that defines us. But I have so many questions. And at the same time, I also have to know that she may not be alive and those answers may have died with her, and that needs to be okay too.
Yeah. I think that's one of the toughest ones, because I don't know if you want to share that. You know, I said you found your biological father. I don't know if you want to touch on that briefly, just what you found out about him and why it hasn't led to finding your biological mom.
Yeah. So my biological father, I found a biological first cousin and reached out to her, and then it all happened really quickly. And because I'd never thought that was a possibility, it wasn't as emotional as I thought it would be. So she said, "Hey, Uncle Tim wants to talk to you." And I remember that night, like, I'm like, do I call him Uncle Tim? Do I call him Timothy? Do I call him Mr. Tim? Do I call, you know, what do you call a biological relative that you've never met? Right. And so I had a 3-hour conversation with him, and, you know, he was like, unfortunately, your biological father passed in 2004, the month before I won Miss Nevada, and it went kind of global, my story. And he said, you know, this is the kind of thing you see in a movie, but you never expect it to come to a theater near you. And here I am, I've got front row seats. I'm going to enjoy my popcorn and enjoy the ride. But he said, he was like, you know, there are a couple things I need you to know before we get off the phone. And he said, you know, when I, due to timing and geography, I was about 90% certain that you were, I'll just call him R for the sake of his privacy. I was sure that you were R's, 90% sure you were R's daughter. And then I saw your picture and I was 95% certain, because we look just alike.
Oh my gosh. They look alike. Like
I'm like girl version of him.
Yeah. Like, she sent me a picture of him and I was like, there's no doubt.
Wow.
This is her dad.
Oh, there's no denying it. Like, we look so much alike. And then he's like, but now that I've talked to you, there is no doubt in my mind. You say the same things. You like the same food. You have the same mannerisms. You ran the same events in track. You're both linguists. You both speak multiple languages. And, you know, he was in the Army and the Navy, and he was a good man. He wasn't the pedophile that I'd braced myself for. He's a good man. He was an amazing man. And he said, but you need to know, there's no way he knew about you.
I was just going to ask that. How do you know that? Yeah.
He said, I know that because he adopted his stepson, and at family reunions, he would cry. He was happy for his siblings, and he had 13 of them. He said he was happy for his siblings, but he would always cry because he had one wish that just never got fulfilled. And he wanted a biological child more than anything, and it just didn't happen for him. And here I am. And I wish he had had a chance to know that before he passed. But he didn't know. And so his dream had come true. We just hadn't met yet. But his family has embraced me, and or those that know about me have embraced me. And it's been really beautiful learning everything about my biological father from his youngest brother. You know, he's 14 years younger and just idolizes him. So it's a pretty cool perspective. And I'd always feared that he would be dead. But oddly, there's kind of a beauty and relief in it, in that I don't have to worry about what this means for my dad and, you know, my relationship with him, and what's this going to mean to the dad who raised me, and, you know, so all of that. So it's less to juggle, but when I see him, I still have questions for him too.
Yeah. That's intense. Right. But that also means, I mean, the minute that that Liz told me that she found out he'd passed away, I was like, like my heart was breaking. And you were kind of like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel right now. Cause I was like, are you okay? Are you going to be like, do you need anything? And she was like, I'm actually oddly okay right now.
And what was so great about having you with me on the journey is that you inject, when it's not your story, you can react normally and appreciate the magnitude of it. But when you're in it, you can only find these like little micro details that your mind can process. And what you do with your authentic normal reaction is you introduce another reaction or emotion that I now have permission to feel, because I've only ever allowed myself to be grateful and accepting of everything and anything I discover. And so when you inject, you know, fury and anger and frustration and emotion and sadness, I was like, oh, wait, maybe I am sad. I hadn't thought about that. Or maybe I am angry. Yes, I am. And it's all of these things that I don't think of. And so I'm always so grateful to watch people outside of my story, especially you, experience it, because it just introduces this whole new dynamic that I'm just not, just doesn't register to me.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, Liz knows this. The thing that really got me was with him passing and never meeting her, is that means that we don't have the second part of the story.
Right.
And that is, who is her biological mother? Why did you leave her? What's going on? What happened to you? Liz is more like, I just want to talk to her. Like, she's my mom, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas I'm over here like, I want to know everything. Yeah. Why would you do this?
She has an bamboo shoots under her nails, like an interrogation.
Yeah. What a life, girlfriend.
It's been an amazing one. Like, I'm so lucky. Like, I've got this incredible story and I don't know anything else. So it's not hard for me. I think it's much harder on the other side. Like, I've had a really incredible life. I'm so thankful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's one of the most incredible people I've ever met.
Yeah.
And obviously I've been like, you have to stay in my life or I'll find you. But yeah, you know, I love for Liz to share this story, because I think that it's an important one. I think that there is a piece of, you know, the story that still has to be answered. And I hope that someone listening would be interested in that. I know now, you know, I watch all these like crime stories and stuff like that. Not that your story is a crime, but you know, what I take from it is there are all these online sleuths who like are interested in finding the truth, you know? Mm-hmm. And I hope somebody will take to your story and maybe help you out. Or if somebody knows something, you know, if they know of a Japanese woman
in the late 1970s
in the Reno area or in the Northern California area is key, right?
Yes. And that's one thing my mom had always thought, my biological mother came from Northern California, because that's where my biological father was stationed.
Mm.
So there's something there.
There's something there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big Japanese community in Northern California.
Is
obviously
there?
Too. Yeah.
Yes. And in fact, my biological father lived across the street from the highest Japanese concentration area in Northern California.
Mm.
He wandered across the street. He was like, hey, moseyed over there.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
so somebody knows something. I think that would be interesting. If I were your biological mother, and whatever reason, whether I was like too young or maybe culturally it wasn't accepted or whatever reason that I would have had to, you know, leave my baby, I kind of think back on it. It's like now if that baby was trying to find me and I knew of it, or, you know, like there was this story in me or something like that that made me want to like look into what happened to this baby. You know, it'd be a relief, I think, to know that she's successful, happy, has her own family, isn't upset, you know, and just really just wants to kind of know, because it's a part of identity and just
and your
a
kid's
completion.
Identity and stuff. Yeah, I get it.
And even if all she gets from it is just knowing that I turned out okay, that's okay too. Because I mean, as a mother, like, isn't that all you would want to know?
Yep.
Is that your baby was okay? I mean, if that's all I can give to her, I would take, and if I got no answers to my question, it's if she just knew that, I'd really be okay. It's, as a mother, I can't imagine how hard that had to have been.
Liz, we get you for another episode and I'm so happy, because just like last time, I can sit and put myself on mute and listen to you talk for hours at length. And we're going to wrap this one up, but we're going to come. But next week, we will have you again because we love you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, ladies. I just adore you both.
We're going to make this short and sweet. She was amazing. That was a long episode. Part two is coming next week. You guys are definitely going to want to hear it.
Yeah, you're definitely going to want to listen and share. Share this episode if you think you know any information that could help Liz. We'll talk to you guys soon. Bye. Love you. Bye.